At the beginning of her essay, The Sovereignty of Good Over Other Concepts, 20th century British philosopher and novelist Iris Murdoch wrote, quote, "I assume that human beings are naturally selfish, and that human life has no external point or telos," close quote. This is Dr. Jim Tomkiewicz, Director of Distance Learning at Wyoming Catholic College, and you're listening to the After Dinner Scholar podcast. Iris Murdoch further wrote, "We humans are what we seem to be, transient moral creatures, subject to necessity and chance. This is to say that there is, in my view, no God in the traditional sense of the term, and the traditional sense is perhaps the only sense," close quote. At the same time, she wrote about virtue, morality, love, beauty, and the good with a capital G, and drawing from Plato's allegory of the cave, she wrote about them as central to a human life well lived. Does that sound paradoxical? To help us untangle the paradox, this week's guest on the After Dinner Scholar is Dr. Thaddeus Kaczynski. This past week, Dr. Kaczynski began his junior-level course on ethics here at Wyoming Catholic College by having students read and discuss Murdoch's The Sovereignty of Good Over Other Concepts. Dr. Kaczynski, Murdoch writes, "Moral philosophy cannot avoid taking sides, and would-be neutral philosophers merely take sides surreptitiously." That makes me think there's a background story here. What's the philosophical context for Murdoch's essay, and why did you choose her as the first essay in your readings for the ethics course?
Sure. I'll take the second part first. Iris Murdoch, a great 20th century British philosopher, moral philosopher, novelist, stateswoman even, she is a thoroughgoing Platonist, and that includes Aristotle as well, in being a proponent of the philosophia perennes, traditional perennial philosophy of ethics. And what that means in a word is that for Murdoch and those of that tradition, there is no moral philosophy, moral inquiry, without a foundation in the good, not the right. The foundation of the right instead of the good would be the sort of paradigm shifts, Copernican revolution that happens in the modern Enlightenment mode of moral inquiry and philosophy, beginning in earnest with Immanuel Kant, for instance, who she calls in that essay a Luciferian, in a way, the philosophy of Lucifer, and we could talk about that a little later. I chose the article because it presents, using more contemporary modern discourse and language, the same kind of principles and way of thinking that we're going to cover in the Aristotelian ethics. It is also interesting that she presents this from a position of a non-theist, even a non-believer, perhaps even an atheist. And yet, even in spite of her denial of there being any kind of what she calls external end of human action or purpose, and her denial of humans having anything but real selfishness at the core, she ends up promoting a kind of spiritually robust and very theistic friendly notion of this, of the good. And so it's just a beautiful essay. I usually begin this ethics class with a kind of contemporary essay to sort of show them right off the bat that what they'll be learning from the ancients is very relevant and very pertinent to contemporary thought and action and culture. And so it seemed like a good fit, and the students really enjoyed it. Of course, they puzzled over it a lot. We could talk about that as well. So the modern context for the first part of your question is she's not an Enlightenment modern thinker in terms of ethics. Talking about the good as the foundation and saying that it's mysterious and that it can't be defined and yet must be the foundation of both thought and practice to be a good person is very ancient and medieval. And so she's a kind of a iconoclast against the modern notion, the Kantian analytical and Enlightenment notion of ethics, which basically says that there is no should in is. The should, the value, what is considered good has to be derived from something other than the real and the facts. And that's a modern sort of cleavage of philosophy and metaphysics and ethics, which I think was a big mistake. So does Alistair McIntyre. He based this whole project on that. And so Murdoch is a good substitute for McIntyre. I usually use McIntyre, actually, for the first essay.
Well, later in the essay, Murdoch writes, "The ordinary person does not, unless corrupted by philosophy, believe he creates values by his choices. He thinks that some things really are better than others, and he is capable of getting it wrong." Elsewhere, she says, "It is the task to come to see the world as it is." Mm. Is Murdoch's approach what you might call a common sense philosophy?
Yeah, she's a common sense realist. And she is basically saying here that if you're open to true existence, true human existence and experience, there is a kind of ineradicable and inescapable deep consciousness of the good. That doesn't mean that one can clearly define this and point it out in the world and prove it. It just means that it's a primordial presupposition of every thought and action. One can't escape it. Only the clever modern philosophers thought they could escape this and found ethics on something else. And she denies that, and I think persuasively shows why it can't be escaped. And yes, that would make her a very common sense philosopher. And I think she is basically telling us that all philosophy is footnotes to Plato, and all ethical philosophy is footnotes to Plato. He started with the good, he ended with the good, and so should we. And, you know, we can nuance this, we can revise and extend and perfect maybe what Plato is in his major insight of the good, the sun, by which everything else is seen, by which everything else is known. We can try that, but we cannot really get around the good. And that's why the title of her essay is "The Sovereignty of Good Over All Other Concepts, Freedom, Equality, Justice." Even love, she says towards the end, is in a sense subordinate to the good.
Plato, it seems to me, has a sense that the good is somehow objective, though. Mm. And Murdoch, of course, doesn't. I mean, isn't there some kind of a contradiction here?
Yeah.
Wouldn't a critique be, well, what if you don't feel that way? Is that okay?
Yeah, this is where Murdoch does show herself to be exquisitely modern. For she has adopted a subjectivist starting point and ending point. And she's not very concerned that one would have to kind of try to derive some kind of objective mind-independent point of view and reality and prove that that exists. Never in this essay does she say the good actually exists outside of human consciousness. She's humble enough, I think, is what she thinks. And she thinks it's a sign of humility not to try to talk about what we can't really talk about. And for Iris Murdoch, and in this sense she's thoroughly modern, we are in our consciousness. It's okay to be there. There's no reason to attempt to get outside of it and point to things that measure our consciousness. What's interesting for Murdoch, and this is what puzzled the students, is she doesn't fall into nihilism or skepticism or a will to power where, well, if everything's in our consciousness, then it's up to us. No, she kind of has this sense that human consciousness is structured in a way that makes certain aspects of that consciousness unmovable, unchangeable, like Platonic forms. And it also mysterious. There's a way in which our consciousness can't be plumbed and exhausted. It's infinite. What we find within the horizon of our consciousness is this mysterious notion of the good. She writes, quote, "A genuine mysteriousness attaches to the idea of goodness and the good." She talks about its end quote. She talks about its indefinability. It really plays the role of God and a kind of transcendent for her, even though at the end of the day, she will not claim that this transcendent good, this mysterious, attractive, divine-like presence, she will not tell us anything about it as if it existed it on its own outside of our consciousness. So that is a little bit puzzling, you could say.
As opposed to, say, Nietzsche, Murdoch says the key to living well is humility. At the end of the essay, she says, "The humble man because he sees himself as nothing, can see other things as they are. Mm. He sees the pointlessness of virtue and its unique value and the endless extent of its demands. The humble man perceives the distance between suffering and death, and although he is not by definition the good man, perhaps he is the kind of man who is most likely of all to become good. That sounds almost Christian.
Yes. You know, I think the most beautiful aspect of this essay is really her starting point. What does it mean? First of all, she says ethical inquiry, ethical philosophy is about becoming a better person. That's it. If it's not doing that, it's worthless. What does it mean to be a better person? And she basically says that our tendency is human selfishness, and our tendency is to make reality conform to our desires. So to live in a kind of bubble of our own self-centered illusion and force everything into that Procrustean bed, as it were. That's immorality for Iris Murdoch. Morality, virtue, the good person is the one who opens him or herself up to reality as it is and lets reality, in a sense, dictate itself to us. We merely behold reality and love it as it is. And that's how we get out of our selfishness. And that's how we start to become virtuous. And so she talks about the way in which we can begin this with beauty. An encounter with beauty is simply an encounter with something that's good to behold, not useful for us, not something we need to dominate or could dominate or should dominate or use for our own self-centered individualistic purposes. But it brings us out of ourselves. It shows us that we're part of a great mysterious whole that's beautiful. And that can happen through natural encounters, and it can happen through artistic encounters. The fact of beauty should teach us that we're not the center of the universe. Something else is. So this contemplative mindset, this contemplative mode of existing, where we let things be, it's sort of like mindfulness in contemporary discourse now. That's kind of what she's saying is the heart of moral activity, good moral activity. And that's humility. And in that sense, we mentioned this in class, we all figured this out, that even though she begins with very, let's say, un-Thomistic and un-Catholic notions that we're in our consciousness and there's no transcendent reality outside of it that we can speak of and all that, what she ends up saying is completely compatible with a Christian ethics. Humility at the center, conforming desire to truth, not truth to desire. She's basically saying those who will lose their life will save it in the end. And she's doing this in a modern contemporary form of language with some modernist presuppositions. And yet she ends up with a very beautiful and true conclusion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Iris Murdoch understood that a life without beauty, without virtue, without the good is deeply unsatisfying. It leads to deceptive, self-consoling fantasy, as she calls it, or despair. To find a way out, she posited the possibility of finding and understanding reality. But a reality without God is a paltry reality at best. If you've been enjoying these After Dinner Scholar podcasts, will you do us a favor? Will you write a review at iTunes? That will help make even more people aware of these podcasts, exposing them to the great books and the liberal arts in a new and compelling way. Thank you. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.